When you're building a culture of belonging, every word counts. That's why Textio brings the world's most advanced language insights into your hiring and employer brand content. Our industry-leading approach to artificial intelligence and machine learning provides the tools needed to find more diverse candidates. In short, Textio builds more equitable workspaces, guiding businesses and writing more inclusive job posts. And we're building on that success by bringing even more products to the market for all people who share our belief that language matters. Words have power, and at Textio, we harness that power to increase the access and availability of value-driven work for everyone.
Good evening, everyone. It is time for the Access Point, brought to you live by Living Corporate. Living Corporate is a digital media network consultancy focused on workplace diversity, equity, and inclusion. Living Corporate centers and amplifies Black and Brown voices in the workplace through digital media production and business-to-business consulting. The network offers a variety of programming, including the Access Point. Here at the Access Point, it is a weekly webinar focused on preparing Black and Brown aspiring and experienced professionals for the workforce by having the real, nuanced talks they don't know they need. During each episode, we examine real challenges you face at work and offer expert advice in dealing with your organization, your boss, your coworkers, and your career. Here's the disclaimer. The thoughts and views expressed in tonight's discussion do not reflect the views of any organization with which the hosts or guests may be affiliated with. Welcome, and we thank you for joining us. I am Dr. Wendy M. Edmonds. I am the author of Intoxicating Followership and co-author of When Leadership Fails. I am a professor, and I'm also a management consultant. So I'm going to turn this over to my awesome co-host, Dr. Lonnie Morris. Lonnie?
Thank you so much, Dr. Wendy. It's always great to be here with you, and I love these shows, and particularly this show. I am Dr. Lonnie Morris. I am also a management consultant and professor. I spend most of my time helping very, very seasoned professionals figure out the difficulties at work to help you hate your job less. This is a really exciting time for us, for all of us. And if you note, the title of this episode is Wakanda is Forever, This Job is Not. So tonight we are talking about the changing landscape of work and what that looks like for you on the inside and how you should still show up and manage those things. And we have a wonderful professional who's here to help us with this discussion today. And I am super excited to introduce everyone to Dr. Yvel Lee, who is a seasoned information technology program manager with experience in big tech, healthcare, and professional sports. She is based in Florida and has deep experience managing global projects and even spent some time living and working in Australia. Currently, she is the Director of Program Management for the United States Tennis Association, where she blends her business acumen and 20 years of expertise with a critical organizational leadership lens to solve complex problems at the individual, group, and organizational levels. Dr. Lee, welcome to the Access Point.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having. I appreciate it, y'all.
So let's jump right in. So this is a really, really interesting time in terms of what's going on, not just in each of our lives. And as we're seeing so much happening, and I'm so excited about the Wakanda Forever movie. And I went to see it earlier this week. And so there's so many things that stood out to me. But I think it gives us a larger context for this conversation. And I want to start here. We know, we know that the workplace and the workforce is shifting. We see just this week major layoffs from tech firms, and we know that that can cascade, right? It's not just tech that's impacted. It's people who are in other roles and other organizations that are impacted by the technology as well. So for example, so far this year, even though the year's almost up, we have Meta just announced 11,000 people are gonna be laid off. Twitter, with all the stuff that's changing there, 3,700. Amazon is at 10,000. Snap, the company that owns Snapchat, 1,200 earlier this year. Microsoft laid off 1,000. Robinhood, the financial services, laid off 800. How would you categorize this moment in time? What is happening for us right now in the workplace? Dr. Lee, why don't you start us off?
So to be fair and honest, everyone's been saying that this tech bubble was going to pop, right? So as professionals, technologists, for a lack of a better way to put it, right, we need to start looking at our skill sets and start looking at them from how can we reinvent ourselves. As technologists, we are very creative. We are innovative individuals. So these lessons that we've learned working in the tech space, because it's been very difficult having to come up from the ground up, learning how to code and then moving into leadership roles, right? How can we take those skills that we've learned from people management, that we've learned from our leadership abilities, our opportunities to be creative in a space where there was nothing before, and take those to other industries and say, hey, I do have these technical skills, but they also apply in these other spaces, aka like people management. How can I've learned all these wonderful talents and have all of these tools in my tool belt that I can use, let's say, in a grocery store, right? They need technology help. How can I say in healthcare, I've learned so much of working in Microsoft, those skills I can apply to a new space in the restaurant industry, these areas where they need technology, and we can move into those spaces quickly and say, hey, I add value and I can be innovative in those spaces as well.
Now, this is why I love you already, because I have never for one day considered the technology at the grocery store.
Well, I was
going to get my grapes and my watermelon and my chicken
and stand in line,
green water, and that's it.
You know, it's interesting because I look at this mass layoff. I have a similar background in the IT industry as well, Dr. Evel. And I remember in the early 2000s when there were mass layoffs in the tech industry, but it was for a different reason. It was because a lot of the companies were swallowing up each other, whether they called it mergers or whatever, you know. It was happening. One of the things that I remembered is that I was always in school. I was always taking a class, pursuing a degree, and that helped me. And when you say make sure that your skills are transferable, I always had to be prepared that one day in an at-will state and with mergers that was going to happen to me. So when you think about technology, yes, you do want to make sure that your skill sets are used in any other industry to make yourself marketable.
And I love that, because we don't always think about how to map our skills to other areas. And sometimes we get sort of typecast, and we've talked about that before on this show, where you've done this one thing for so long in this one context, and so you're an expert there, and you might get stuck in those spaces. But these are times when we know we need to think about it differently, because as we've noted, the job you have may not exist anymore.
Correct. As technology professionals, we know our job is to, in some regard, to phase ourselves out, right? And technology is meant to be used for people to be efficient, right? So if we've been in this role for 20 years, right, we have not met our duty as a technologist and said, hey, how did I make this better? How did I make this organization better, right, from a technology perspective? And as technologists, we always need to continually grow and see what the technology is available for us and what we can do with it. How can we think about it in a different fashion? So I agree with both of y'all wholeheartedly.
I want to also look at this a little differently just for a second, because when I look at the layoffs and the language behind the layoffs, one of the things that I do remember being in the IT industry is that when there were mass layoffs, they had companies and consultants that came in to help you do your resume and help you to look for another job, sending you to recruiting offices, those kinds of things. But when you turn on the news and you hear that you have to sign a letter of commitment that you're going to work yourself to death or leave. That doesn't seem like a place that you really want to stay forever anyway. I just thought that was just so interesting that this is what we're telling you up front. We're going to kill you.
Oh, wow.
And please sign up for this because, yeah, you're going to have to work. We have to be brutal like this. We have to be hardcore. We have to. And that was synonymous with you give me everything or you got to go.
Oh, wow.
But honestly, it's nothing new in technology. There's always been this grind of work. If you work hard, you get to play hard, right? But there was never any play hard at the end from my experience, right? Mm-hmm. It was always that grind every day. And I woke up and I said, life's too short. And y'all are trying to grade me a little too soon. So what do I need to do to make my space, my career, my profession somewhere I want to be? And if technology is not it, I may have had to make that choice and said, hey, I got to chuck these two fingers and bounce, yo. So
the deuces. So this is great, right? And so it's making me think about so many things relative to this, because yes, this week we see a lot with layoffs, but we also know the workplace is changing not just because of that. It's sort of one of the things that's happening because we are still experiencing the iterations of the Great Resignation and the iterations of everything quiet quitting and all the ways we've been talking about it. So I saw this in on thestreet.com earlier this week, and it said there's a list of industries that are majorly affected by employees leaving. This is to your point, Dr. Wendy, that sometimes you got to go. And Dr. Evel, you said, hey, check the deuces. And it said, here are the ones in the top 10. And some of these have come up in some of our former conversations. So hospitality and food services, people are leaving the most. Retail is in the top 10. Arts, entertainment, and recreation in the top 10. Transportation is in the top 10. Healthcare is in the top 10. And education is in the top 10. So if we know it's not just the layoffs, but people are also running out of these places, how do we get our handled around that? If you are managing this, particularly in what you described, Dr. Lee, if you are supposed to create a space that makes your job obsolete so that people can be better and function differently, how do we juxtapose the two?
Ooh, that's a good question. It's reward at the end of the day, from my perspective, right?
Sorry. I like war better. Go ahead with reward.
I do too. I thought you said war. Let's have it.
We can go look at it from that lens too, right? So one being the reward, right? As a person that I chose this profession, I wanted to be here, right? There was something about it that drew me to it and made me want to be the best that I could in that space, right? So how do we continue to say this is creating these jobs and these spaces that they're meaningful? They create, someone feels they're creating value in their space, right? I left the healthcare industry after 20 years, right? Because of that grind in technology, it wasn't rewarding anymore. What could my leadership done at that point in time? Honestly, a thank you would have made a big difference. Honestly, some mentoring, some coaching to say, hey, you're just not going to be middle management for the next 10 years and waiting for this other person to retire, right? What is it? Looking at my career path and saying, is this a good space for me? And having honest conversations with me about, yes, you know what? You should be in healthcare because you provide this value. You've done this A, B, C, and D in the acknowledgement of it, right? Not necessarily the pay, right? But if we do look at it from that war perspective, right? Going back to our Wakanda Forever theme, right? It's, we have to be strategic at the end of the day. How is it that we've got this other organization out here that's saying, hey, you know, I know it's out there, it's hard in healthcare, but if you come over here, you know, I'll appreciate you, right? So being a strategic person, you know, I'm going to make that move, right?
Yeah, I love that.
There are a couple of things that I thought about when you mentioned those six areas. There's two things that stand out. One is that some of them are service industries. So serving the public can be draining in itself. And if you never get a thank you, I appreciate you externally from the consumer, and you never get it internally, it's very difficult to stay. That could play on it. And then I look at it and think about these industries are also based on, they're hierarchical, right? So based on seniority. When you think of food services, retail, you know, when you go in, you get the grunt job. You start at the bottom, you work your way to the top, and or you never get to the top if you don't quite start at the bottom. So those are things I think that all contribute to running away from the industries.
So I love it, and I love when we get here, but you also know I love this. I also love, and I do this very often when we talk, is bring up why people, how people hate work and why they hate it, because there's so much evidence all over the place. So, so I saw this in Fortune earlier this week, and I get it. We know that there are layoffs because there are economic pressures, financial pressures, political pressures. We know that people are leaving for all the things we know we've experienced throughout the pandemic and how our thinking about work is shifting. But this is a report that came out in Fortune earlier this week, and they've been surveying people a lot about how they think about work. And this actually says that 50% of the American workers they surveyed would not wish their job on their worst enemy. That people are unhappy, they are angry, and that work in general is failing to meet the expectations of the employees. And this is, they talked to 2,200 employees, 600 executives, and 600 HR executives.
That's no small number.
That, right. As they said, 45% of U.S. workers would not wish their job on their worst enemy. 46% of people surveyed would not recommend their company or their profession to their children or any young person they cared about. 53% said if they could go back in time, they would switch paths. And 40% said, I wish somebody would have told me. How do we get under this? How do we get under if people are leaving, people are being pushed out, and people hate it?
I'm over here like chuckling to myself, to be honest. Like, cause I was like, I was all of the statistics.
Goodness.
Honestly, like, I had to have an intervention with myself and one of my friends. Cause I felt every point that Dr. Moore has said about, I wouldn't wish my job on my worst enemy.
That's why it was silent. For our listeners who didn't understand that, the red light was on because we were behind the mic cracking up.
I wasn't the only one. Oh, man. So you had an intervention with yourself. Tell us more.
I had an intervention with myself, and I said, so I turned 40 this year, y'all. So, and I said, I am not going into 40 with my hair falling out, my skin messed up, yeah. Right?
Too cute. It's for like that.
You know what I'm saying? That beat down grind on you starts to manifest in you physically. And I looked at myself, I was like, this is not the person who I want to be. This is not the person I am. I'm trying to be, you know, because I'm like all about being health and fitness. And I looked and I said, nope, this is not it. So I had a conversation with my executive coach, as well as she's a good friend of mine. And we sat down, we put a plan together about my escape plan and said, you got to go because
I love it. Escape plan.
I felt like I was on the Underground Railroad.
Oh man.
Said Wakanda is falling.
And because of that, right? I said that my next job was going to be somewhere I wanted to be. And I can honestly say that my job is where I want to be. This is the first time in 20 years that I can say I love my job because I decided to make a change that was emotionally, mentally, and physically healthy for me. But I have to caveat that with as well, not everybody has the opportunity to have that executive coach and make that shift and just blow up their lives, right? So any advice that I can give to anyone is just take a moment, do some self-reflection, introspection, and that mentor or mom, dad, parent, anybody, just have a conversation and just put it out on Front Street.
I love that.
I do too. And I look, that right there says it all. I think you just told the whole story and it worked. And when you say that, you know, everybody may not have a coach, but we talk about on this program, we often talk about having your external board of directors. This is who you run to. This is where you get your help. This is where you find your coaches. This is who helps you to sit down and plan out. Well, I always thought E was for exit, but tonight I found out that E is for escape.
For escape? I can run to the grocery store and get my strawberries and my ground turkey. Yep.
I love it. It was an escape. Like, and it was at the end of that journey, the redemption was real, right? To feel like, hey, I thought I was stuck in this place. I was never really stuck. It was my mentality that was stuck. So once I decided to change my mentality, it was nothing but a thing. Like,
that's a word right there. The mentality is what keeps you there. And I'm trying to give so many spoilers about the movie because I know people who are listening may not have seen it yet. In fact, I know that our co-host, Dr. Wendy, hasn't seen it yet. But it's speaking to all these things that resonated with me when I watched Wakanda Forever about managing what was changing in the landscape, right? The redemption is real. Getting to that authentic self and how you get to apply that, how you get to live that is a real thing. And that we have to do the work, though, right, Dr. Lee? We have to do the work to get through it and figure it out. And sometimes we know it takes longer than we expect. Sometimes it takes 20 years.
Totally, right? It's like I tell a lot of the women that I coach, right? It's about the long game. Right. So today, old boy may have like ticked you off, right? Because he just ignored you because you don't know your knowledge, you know, from his lens, because he's been doing it for 5 years longer than you, but you're more innovative and creative. So let him have the win. Let him have it. Right. But you're looking 10, 15 years down the road and saying, how is this going to play out for me? Right. So if you don't see the reward today, you will always receive the reward later, as long as you're willing to put that work in and continue to overcome those hurdles, because those hurdles are your true lessons learned, not the easy path. It is never that. And I can honestly say that because those hard lessons I learned in healthcare have translated at the USTA, and it has made my life a wonderful place.
That's such an incredible story. I appreciate that so much. Thank you for that. So let's add something else to the mix in this conversation. So if we take all those three previous things we just discussed, so the layoffs, the great resignation and all its iterations, and the quiet quitting, and then just that people don't like work, right? There's just some generalizations, people just don't like work. I saw this, so it seems clear why there's this anxiety around work, why stress levels are high, because it's almost this imperfect storm of these things crashing together. So I saw this study in the European Journal of Industrial Relations, and they looked at specifically at how environmental factors impact people and around the ideas of well-being. So really it's about what's happening to people in your work sphere, right? And that they could be having different experiences. So for example, they surveyed 16,000 people across Europe. They looked at three different things: organizational distress, and they described that as financial strains and things like workforce reduction. So we talked about the top of the show with layoffs. Job deterioration. So that's something like if your pay is being reduced, your hours are being reduced, or you've got the threat of being fired, the threat of layoff. So it's insecurity around your job. And then this notion of work and non-work interference. So how the stress from those two things spills over into your non-work life. So if we know people are stressed around this, we know people don't always like work. We know that we are facing people running out of particularly certain industries that we've highlighted. We know that layoffs are impacting us. This is saying that there could be some differences in how you experience it. So what they found was this idea of job deterioration was related to the work and non-work interference. So if you are losing money, your pay is being reduced, your hours are being reduced, that's having a major effect on how you show up in other spaces with your friends, with your family, and your social circles. However, if the organization is just losing money and there's a threat of layoffs, but it might not be your role, it's not so impactful. So what do we do if we are all experiencing the same things, right? But having different experiences. So how, if someone like Dr. Lee, you've discovered your exit plan, your escape plan, you've got your coach and you're talking to people, and you're mapping it out, somebody else in your cubicle or in your pod is not doing the same thing. How do we show up and navigate that when our experiences are so varied?
Honestly, it's communication, right? And to be honest with you, I had a similar situation with the guy next to me in my cube. We sat next together for 5 years, right? And we had this bond of like, yo, like if one of us leaves, both of us leaves, right? But if we had that communication.
That's always a fact. Let me know first.
Exactly, right? You know, you have to find that person in your space, right? And if you see that person struggling too, right? Be open to have the conversation, right? Because you don't know what you may learn from each other, right? That little tidbit to say, hey, you know, I've got this executive coach, Rashonda Cook, you know, and he and I had this conversation, you know, hit her up, you know, she can help you put together an escape plan too, so we can both bounce, right? It's just those little things to have empathy for each other, right? You don't, like you said, you don't know what somebody else is going through. Take the time and say, hey, we are a community. We are more than coworkers at times. We're in a tough position together. How can we help each other? You know, to this day, people still don't talk about salary at work. I want to know what somebody else is making. Right. So yeah. I know I'm getting paid right.
Yeah. You just broke the rule.
And that's interesting. And I don't want to interrupt, but I want to interject this, right? Because I see that in even some chat groups I'm in, and people are very open and honest about, here's how much I make. But for that same reason, Dr. Lee, you said, I want you to know, here's where I am, here's where my rank is, here's how my experience, and here's what they're paying me. So that one, if you are up for a similar role, you know what it looks like. Or if you are getting paid more than me, I can go and get my reparations for it, right? So it's helping each other. That's the path that we're talking about. It isn't just the support in the cube and at the water cooler or on the Zoom meeting in the private chat when they're talking and you don't want to hear that, but it's showing up in these ways that help us hold organizations accountable too, right?
Facts. That's all I got to say. 100.
Exactly. You were going to say something, Dr. Wendy, about it.
Well, only thing I wanted to add to that is that, you know, for me, I am going to find a playground. I have to be busy. My kindergarten teacher said, if Wendy is not busy, she gets into mischief. And so for that reason, I don't think much has changed. Right. I'm going to have to do something. So how do we create our playground is that you do have your groups, your cohorts that you're going to work with and create the playground that you're going to play in. Because there is mischief. There are people who will make every attempt to make you pay for being innovative. Those kinds of things happen on every single job. They, you know, where it may not be appreciated. So you come in the creative, but everybody's not trying to hear you. Everyone doesn't appreciate it because your creativity can look like what? It can look like work for the next person. And people are at different phases and stages in their work career, in their career, in their work life. And if they're wrapping it up, they're not trying to always be that creative and have a whole lot more to do. They're really basically trying to wind down. So you find that person that's going to help to create the playground so that you can exert that energy then and begin to use your creativity where it is going to be welcome.
I love that. I've never thought of it as creating a playground. And we look at our alliances at work differently. But I think even the language around that makes me think of it differently. That it doesn't have to be so formal. It doesn't have to be so stoic. That connecting with people, creating relationships that help you navigate these shifts that we're talking about, that help you hold each other to be accountable partners, accountability partners, but also to put pressure on your organization to do right. That can be play. I love that.
Mm-hmm. I've had to learn to do that in different spaces on different jobs because I am creative. And sometimes people are like, I wish you would go sit down. I wish you would be quiet.
Here come Wendy with another good idea.
Yeah, don't say anything. Don't let her talk. So I've learned that.
That's good. So to some extent, I think we're talking about dealing with change. And most times we think of change from a change management organizational perspective, and we're thinking about processing and diagrams. But this is change at not only organizational level, but at group level. And at an individual level, we're talking about how when the world around you is shifting, what does that mean for you? So in this context, and I'm thinking not just 2022 in terms of where we are with technology and workforce expectations, but just coming out of all of the restrictions and things we dealt with during the pandemic, we've got to think about how do we show up and deal with change. And so there's a list I saw on Indeed that's from earlier this year in the spring. And it's this guide to coping with change in the workplace. And you know already, I'm not always a fan of lists that I see, but I want to share some things from it and get you to respond to this. It says, plan ahead. We talked about that. Think positively. Make time for reflection. Create structure so you have a sense of normalcy. Manage your stress. Communicate with others. We just talked about that. Your coworkers. Support others in ways that they need it. Be flexible. Assess and develop your skills. We talked about that already. And these last two, use humor and expect change, right? So the list seems like, okay, it's pretty blah. I don't particularly enjoy this idea of using humor while I get it in terms of how they described it. But when we're asking people to think about the changes that are impacting your career, your professional life right now, what should we be saying? And specifically, what does that look like for Black and brown people? Dr. Lee.
I'm sitting here thinking about it. I think there's some keynotes, right? That for Black and brown people, one that we don't acknowledge is the stress piece, right? Yeah. A lot of us are sole providers for our families. A lot of us take on a lot of responsibility because sometimes we have this need or, you know, to extra prove ourselves, right? So in this time of change, right, what tools are we using to mitigate those levels of stress, right? Whether it's I'm going to meditate for 10 to 15 minutes, I'm going to go work on this boxing bag that I used to do for a half an hour and get it out. But we really need to look at how we're going to fix that.
She was preparing for that underground. What?
Somebody stepping his path.
But yeah, we got to look at that. Like for us as a people, that's one of our biggest killers in our community is stress. So taking that time and saying, I'm going to relax, relate, release. And sometimes I got to say, I'm going to go with God.
There you go.
Go with God. Because if you go with me, it's going to be an issue.
I also think about supporting others, that with Black and brown people, it can be difficult to do that. One is because of your own challenges that you're faced with, and staying, keeping your head above water, trying to work things through, that taking on just one more thing and helping one more person could look like pain. It could look like it's you know, this is the one that's going to tip it over. But supporting each other and having that reflection time, that discussion time, that could really be more helpful to you than you think. And also being flexible, leave rigidity alone, because it doesn't leave room for you to be spontaneous. It doesn't leave room for you to accept something different. If everything is ABC, ABC, Monday through Sunday, that could be a problem. So I think being flexible will lead to the humor. And I would say that those are the most important, what Dr. Ebell said, you know, managing that stress, that is the killer, that it's silent. You don't know it until it shows up. But I think the other things that we mentioned are really helpful.
We've been talking about that a lot on this show, about how stress shows up, and particularly stress that's induced from work experiences. And so I appreciate all of these comments, and I still have this vision of Dr. Lee on with the punching bag, right? Because I think it goes back to the idea of war. And I think Dr. Angel Acosta must have planted that seed when we had our conversation with him last week, because he talked about it as war, and that this is a war. It's very personal. Things at work are very serious. And so you have to think about it tactically, strategically. And to your point, Dr. Lee, it's about not the individual battles, but the entire war that we're trying to conquer, right? So some of these small things you can give up because it may not be as strategic in the long-term plan.
Can I also mention here too that, you know, part of coping is not talking about it all the time. You know, we can find ourselves doing that. But if you're going to go for a walk as a stress relief, you don't want to have that conversation talking about it the whole walk.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Talk about something else that you enjoy. Step away from it. When you are out and you're away from it all, just step away, truly. Step away. Don't have that conversation. It's consuming, all consuming otherwise.
I love that. And we see it. I see it very often with clients that I deal with, and organizations I work with, where there are some people who are so traumatized by what they've experienced. And it is part of multiple shifts they may have dealt with, leadership changes, executive changes, organizational structure changes. And if they've been in an organization for long enough, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, like, hey, we are always under some kind of X, and it continues to weigh on you, and you find yourself trapped, that it's part of everything you think about. And so getting out of that really takes some intention and deliberate actions. So it makes me think, gosh, where are we? What has really happened to us right now? I think I looked at something just yesterday at Fast Company, and they said there are 5 trends we should expect for the workplace starting next year. So when January opens up, we know there's going to be a continued tight labor market. So even though we see these mass layoffs and we see people exiting their own, and we know that people hate it, labor market is going to be tight. We are clear that remote work and work from anywhere is here to stay, no matter what that looks like for you in some type of hybrid situation, if you're going in a few times or not going in at all. We know that because of these things happening, particularly with the great resignation and the quiet quitting areas, that since we were leaving, organizations are boosting the benefits and trying to find other ways to keep you happy, to keep you satisfied, to keep you engaged. So we're going to see more benefits offered. They've got this here that happiness has now become a measure of success in work, which is very interesting. And then, and this is one that sort of has an asterisk on it, that there is a continued emphasis on diversity, equity, inclusion sometimes for some people. In some organizations, that's going to be true, not every place. What is really happening? So what is your vision for the future? When we talk about, we go back to our original idea of the shifting landscape in Wakanda. So this place that you wanted to be, this workplace that was an oasis for you, and that's shifting. So what do we see? What do we want people to look out for as we close out 2022 and think about work in 2023? Dr. Wendy.
Okay. So, you know, for 2023, what we are going to see is something that we would look at the website and they would talk about. I often see this with DE&I. This is who we are. This is how we provide equity across the board. But if we don't see it reflected throughout the organization, I believe that employees are going to hold them accountable. 2023 is going to be the year of accountability. You can no longer say what you want from your employees and not be the example. If you want to lead with empathy, you're going to have to show that. You have to be that leader that does that. If not, there's going to be prices to pay because people won't. You see the mass walkaways, right? We talk about the great resignations. People are finding other options. And so there, it's going to have to be the leaders of the organizations are going to have to lead by example.
I can see that. Dr. Lee, what do you think?
I'm here for all of it. I'm seeing workers take their power back. Right? We're just not a cog in the machine anymore. We are people. I am more than my employee number. So respect that. Workers are asking for the respect that they deserve. And I agree with Dr. Wendy too. Like, if you're going to talk the talk, you better walk the walk. Right? I better see someone that looks like me.
Yeah, we're watching you. We're watching you. And we want to be heard.
So I want to ask another question that's related to this, particularly because our focus here at Living Corporate and through the Access Point is so much on DEI, and we've had multiple professionals come and talk with us around that. And we are really trying to amplify that work across all spaces. And I'm always concerned about people who are in those roles, so who have that responsibility on their shoulders within organizations, in the context of the things that we're talking about, the shifts in the landscape of the workplace, the dynamics between the individuals that may be supportive, that may not, the quitting, the resignations, the layoffs, the disdain for the organization. So what do we also expect from the organization as it relates to those roles, but also what do we expect from the people who are championing this work across organizations?
For those that are championing those they need a support mechanism. Like 9 times out of 10, I see the DEI person, right? It's a Black lady with one person helping her, right?
Yeah. or do it alone. Or
yeah. Do it facts. Alone.
Yeah.
Right? If we're going to be committed to this DEI initiative, right? Put the dollars behind it, put the people behind it, and put a real program that you believe in behind it, right? It's not, I don't want to say, hey, we had this program, it lasted a year and a half, and now we're on to the next hot thing in DEI. No, you know, put a line in the sand and say, this is our commitment to it. And regardless of whether or not it's popular, we know what's good for our organization and own it.
Thank you, Dr. Evel. I am so with you. I feel the same way about what we see and hear about wellness in the workplace. You can't say that you want your employees to have work-life balance and you're working them to the bone. Those two things don't line up. And so if you're going to really promote work-life balance, you're going to have to consider the use of technology that worked so well during the pandemic. You are going to have to make sure that you have more than just a quiet room for your employees to go to. But when they want to have their voice heard, that you provide that safe space for them, because that's a part of wellness as well.
I always feel well when I'm on the calls with y'all, because you give me so much to chew on, so much to think about, so many ways to view these situations that I don't always consider. So it's important for me. So I want to say thank you to both of you as we look at this. So I think this is my last question for our conversation. And this is part of tying up, closing out our season for 2022. What is next in the future of work as we're looking at the changing landscape, as we're considering all the factors we talked about today? What does that look like for you, Dr. Lee? What does that look like for you, Dr. Wendy?
As we look at this change in the workplace, it's exciting. It's an opportunity to say, how can I do my job better? But also, how can I better support my team, right? They're going through this change with me. So what can I help, or how can I help them find value in what it is they do today, and then help them to see what it's going to look like for them tomorrow? Because at this point in my career, it's not about me anymore. It's mm-hmm. about the people who I'm like bringing up and coaching and saying, hey, you are my succession plan, because I'm not going to be here in another 15 years.
If they say the wrong thing, I might not be here another 5.
Countdown is on. I think I hear the countdown.
Oh, I love it. Dr. Wendy.
So for me, I am always going to create the playground. It doesn't matter where you are, what you do. When you understand your calling, when you know your gift, when you know there are other people that can benefit from that, you want to involve and support and help them to grow, that's exactly what you have to do. And that's what it's going to look like for me. It is going to look like, no matter what obstacle comes my way, no matter what arrows, no matter what darts may be presented, duck and move. Now, I don't know if that happened in Wakanda, but I know that's my 2023. That is my motto, duck and move. Mm. Keep it going.
Mm. Love it.
So I love this. I think for me, it is definitely akin to themes we saw emerge in the movie with M'Baku's mentoring of Shuri, with her accepting and dealing with and processing the transition of the Black Panther and then having to emerge into that role. It makes me think that, like you, Dr. Lee, I want to continue to provide space for other people to expand their capacity and to open doors and to create pathways. Much like you, I've had an incredible career and there aren't a lot of things that are about me anymore, right? My role, my work, the value that I add is helping to shift the playground, Dr. Wendy, for other people, so that your playground looks different. Your playground has better toys, a different type of slide. Your playground has better quality sand. you're set up for a different type of success, that you don't have to face the types of barriers that I had to conquer, and we eliminate some of those challenges. I appreciate both of you for sharing that. So let's take a look at all the stuff we learned today. So when we're thinking about this seismic shift in what's happening in the workforce and how your job may change, your workplace may change. For employees, we said, think about how you can reinvent yourself. Apply the creativity that you've amassed in your role and your profession to other industries. Map out your transferable skills. I love that. I think I'm going to be applying to work at a grocery store. Remember that the notion of layoffs happens in cycles. It comes and it goes. We saw it in the early 2000s. We're seeing it now. So there are some things you see that you can prepare for, at least when you recognize the signs. Take stock of what is the goal of your job. And Dr. Lee said so eloquently, sometimes your role is to make your job obsolete. To do your work so well that other people don't need that service anymore. Be very, very specific about your own self-evaluation. What do you want to be? Who are you trying to be? Develop an escape plan. I'm about to put that on my vision board.
Yes, the new E word.
Develop an escape plan. Have conversations with people that you trust about what's happening and plant seeds of growth in those spaces. Recognize that redemption is real. The work you do on self, particularly after you escape, can be very helpful to your own well-being and happiness. Let them have the win for today. Dr. Lee said that. Think about the long game. You don't have to win every fight. Create your own playground. Leverage your strengths, your innovation, and your creativity. Acknowledge stress. Practice relax, relate, and release, and anything else that's relative to that, because the stress can kill you metaphorically and physically. Find ways to step away from the things that are causing you stress and grief related to these changes. For leaders and supervisors, we want to understand, you need to understand what draws people to their positions and to their professions, and tap into that as you work with them, as you give them assignments and help them navigate their career paths. Understand the value that your employees want to create, and it may be slightly different than what you view as a value, and it may be a subset of how the organization sees what's really happening. Do the basics, but do the most with the basics. Say thank you. Show appreciation. Recognize the difference between the work and the playground, that someone is creating a space to be innovative and to create value and to add more meaning does not always mean it's more work for other people. Figure out how to support others, particularly people who report to you, and ask them how they want to be supported. For groups and teams, show up for each other. Make sure that you have accountability for your own escape or your own shift as the workforce is shifting. Make a pact with people you trust and take care of each other in that pact. Have open conversations. I lost my train of thought. Have open conversations. Acknowledge community over coworkers. Share honestly so you can hold the organization accountable. Find ways to help people cope. At the organizational level, recognize that people need both internal and external appreciation. Service work is hard and it should not be thankless. Reimagine the hierarchy. Sometimes the structure is what creates the stress for people. Leave rigidity alone. Come on, Dr. Wendy. Flexibility is very important, not just for individuals, but for all the groups as you work around. This coming year will be the year of accountability. Your employees will demand more, and you, your leadership, your strategic leadership, your executive leadership, and your organization will have to be accountable for that and show that you mean this in your actions. Employees are taking their power back in 2023. They're asking for respect and demanding all the things that come with it. If you are going to continue to be an organization that espouses values related to DEI, put resources and dollars behind that. Focus on what is good versus what is popular. And remember that working someone to the bone does not equal work-life balance. So if we take all those things into consideration, if someone is listening to this, either live with us on Twitter or in the replay in one of the podcast spaces, if you don't heed any of this advice, what is the black and brown tax that we pay? What is the cost of not doing these things? Dr. Lee.
You're going to be stuck at the end of the day, right? These positions that we don't want, you're not going to be able to transition. This session has been excellent about putting your escape plan together. We've got our playground to go play in the sand and be creative if we're going to stay. But if you don't sit down and listen to this, I wish you well.
How about it?
That's right. Because you may never get to see and know your best self.
Wow. That makes me sad. I think for me, this is about, and you're going to love this, preserving Wakanda. Right. When we think about the movie, think about the sequence, all this stuff is about all these individual pieces coming together for the greater good. So doing this work at the organization level, at the individual level, at the group and team level, and that the leadership level is about preserving the oasis. It's about making sure that we are all in line so that we keep the resources, that we preserve the best technology, that we prevent our mentors from being dethroned. All those things are important. So we are all responsible for guarding the change. And if we don't do that right, if we don't shepherd the resources properly, if we don't look out for each other, then we lose the kingdom. It is always a pleasure to be here with you, Dr. Lee. Thank you so much for joining us for our last show of the season. It has been incredible. Your expertise and your insight is outstanding. We love you. Thank you so much for being on the show. Dr. Wendy, it's always a pleasure to sit at these microphones with you. I appreciate you allowing me to hold space with you. For those of you who are joining us live, thank you so much. Hope you enjoyed this show as you have the others. If you want to connect with us and Living Corporate, here are all of our socials. On the web, we are livingcorporate.tv. On Twitter, we are at Living Corporate. On LinkedIn, we are living-corporate. On Instagram, we are at Living Corporate. And for podcasts, you can access the Access Point wherever you get your podcasts. So if that's Apple, that's Spotify, that's Google, you like, share, subscribe, and comment. If you want to join us live, we are on Thursdays in Twitter Spaces at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, but not anymore this year. This is the last show. We will see you after the new year. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone, and good night.
Good night.
Good night, and thank you.
Living Corporate is brought to you by Doximity. Over 90% of graduating medical students join Doximity to use our tools before earning their doctoral degree. As medicine's largest network, there's an elevated level of responsibility to everything we do. We don't take that responsibility lightly and are committed to working towards a more equitable world inside and beyond our virtual office walls. If you want to learn more about Doximity, make sure you go to your app store, type in DOXIMITY. That's DOXIMITY.